The reading tonight will be from the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verse 9. Joshua, chapter 1, verse 9. Have I not commanded you, be strong and of good courage? Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go.
Good evening, everyone. Good to see everybody out tonight. We've got a lot of visitors here. We're glad to see you here. We ask that you take a Bible tonight and follow along with what we have to say. Appreciate the elders giving me this opportunity to stand before you. It's been a while, as you can tell. But I hope some way, somehow, the things I prepared will help you in your daily lives and your individual walk with Christ. You couldn't tell it by my physical appearance, but for the last couple months, I've been part of a fitness challenge group. This was created by a guy that I knew years ago, and some people that I've known for years are in this group, and there's some people from social media in there also. This group is designed to encourage one another to help meet your fitness goals, and this is done through encouragement, motivation, recipe tips, workout tips, different things of that nature. Every day has a different theme, and Mondays are my favorite day because it's Motivation Monday. Each member of the group searches the internet and tries to find some type of quote, or you can search a book, or you can make up your own, some way to post to try to motivate everyone in the group to meet their goals. I searched the internet a few weeks ago and I found this one, and it's a really good one. Life begins at the end of your comfort zone. The author of this is Neil Donald Walsh. Apparently, he's a writer of a series of books called With God. I've never read any of his work, so I don't know what he believes. Some of you might have. But this can be applied in so many areas of our lives. We can make a list of the cows come home. But tonight, I want to talk about how we apply this mindset to our service to God. Do we sometimes get too comfortable in our relationship with God and or our brothers and sisters in Christ? I'm going to be talking about a few men who have been asked to step out of their comfort zone, Noah being the first one. We know these stories, we're familiar with them, so we're not going to do a ton of reading. But the verses are there for you to follow along should you need them. So a little background here. We've had creation, Adam and Eve being created. We've had sin. We've had murders. There's wickedness everywhere. Every thought man has is evil, and God grieves so much that he regretted that he created man. So the future of man looking pretty bleak right now. Violence, corruption. So the Lord said, my spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. But Noah found favor in God's eyes. Verse 8 tells us that. How populated do you think the world was back there in this time? Let's just go by how long Adam lived, 930 years. How many people do you think were there? Quite a bit. We estimate we're around 2,500 years old when the flood came, so there was a lot of people in the world at this time. One man was found righteousness of all these people. That's a sobering thought for us today, considering there's 7 billion people in the world now. And along with his family, they were the ones that are going to be saved. God speaks to Noah. Just think about this for a second. How would you react if you're just hanging out doing whatever Noah did, and this voice just comes out of nowhere and says, what does he say in verse 13? And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Not the best answer you want to hear from a voice just coming out of nowhere. But he gave instructions to Noah for the ark. Rooms of material, gopher wood. A lot of people, there's some kind of debate about what kind of wood it was, cypress or cedar. The Hebrew transliterated it, it's unknown tree. The Septuagint says a squared timber. So something had to be done to it because I haven't seen these squared trees before. The Vulgate says smooth or plain. And regardless of the species, it doesn't really matter because a lot was needed and it took a while to process this. And certainly the verse going on through there tells us they need to pitch to cover the inside and outside, the idea being waterproofing the ark. And it's a good thing Noah had 120 years to do this, because that took a long time to smooth all those timber, all that timber out. Dimensions and layout. We're not going to get into too much the specifics of it, but something that just, a question that came to me, did Noah have any prior experience building anything? Obviously, 500 years old, you're going to have to learn something. But I mean, something of that magnitude, this thing was ginormous for its time. So did he have any prior experience building anything like this? Certainly, whatever he lacked, God helped him. So God establishes his covenant with Noah and his family, and he gave instructions about animals and food for them and Noah's family. He did all God commanded. Do you think Noah was ridiculed in any way while he was leveling a small forest? Probably so. Probably got some weird looks, people saying, what is he doing? He's cutting all this timber down. I don't understand what he's doing. He wasn't engaging in all this nastiness that everybody else was engaging in. He was different. 1 Peter 2, verse 9 says, we are to be different. Not better, but different. We're a royal priesthood. The King James Version says, a peculiar people. It's difficult to be different. Think of this. How many times have you ever been made fun of for doing what God asked you to do? Have you ever been made fun of for going to a Bible study instead of hanging out with your friends or going to a dance or instead of going to the lake for some kind of cookout or something like that? You chose to go to a small church building with 448 other people to sing praises to God. It's uncomfortable to be different sometimes. Something to consider. Noah and his family were on the ark for a year. Now, I've never been on a cruise ship before, so I don't know how that works, how I would react to something like that. But we're not talking about the best stateroom on the Royal Caribbean. It's most likely a bed of straw or a hammock. That was the best thing you had to sleep on. There was no shuffleboard. There was no fitness center, no pool, no all-you-can-eat buffet that was butchered and cooked for you. No naughty little flow rider way to learn how to surf. 8 people on the boat, 4 year, no way to get away from each other. There's 11 people in my family, all of whom who are here. We rent a cabin for 3 days in Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge. We have our cars. We can go outside on the deck, or we can walk down to the little pool where you can feed fish. 3 days. Day 1.5 can get pretty dicey. These people were on a boat for a year with no way to get away from each other. You couple that with the animals, the stench, feeding them, cleaning up after them. This was not a pleasure cruise. This was work. And Noah had other responsibilities while building the ark. As most people did back at this time, he worked the ground. He planted a post-flood vineyard afterwards. And he had to provide for his family in some way, so he was busy. He also preached, and when he wasn't, 2 Peter 2, verse 5 tells us that. When he wasn't preaching God's divine word, he was preaching through his actions. God gave Noah a task, and Noah, by faith, was doing it. The bottom line here is Noah feared God. By faith, Noah being warned of by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear, constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this, he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. Noah had a lot on his plate, and he still obeyed God. What about our plates? Do we ever think, man, I just got too much going on. I can't get my Bible lesson done. There's no way I can prepare for a Bible study or a class or nothing like that. Noah had a lot going on. I've yet to drive by anybody's house and watching them build a ark. Noah had a lot going on. The next person we're talking about is Abraham. He's called Abram, but for simplicity's sake, I'm just going to say Abraham. The leg of this journey has already been completed where we're going to pick up. But that was 700 miles. So Abraham's father worshiped other gods. Joshua 24:2 tells us that. And what kind of influence do you think this had on Abraham? You got to ask yourself, what kind of influence do you have on your kids when you do stuff that God doesn't want you to do? God knew Abraham was faithful. You are the Lord, the God chose Abram and brought him into Ur of the Chaldeans and gave him the name Abram. You found his heart faithful. So God knew Abraham was faithful. Here we go again. God speaks to Abraham.
Acts 7, verse 2 and 3 says, the glory of the God appeared to the father Abraham. Again, how would you react to this? Hanging out in Haran, doing whatever Abraham did. And this voice just says, you got to go. It's time for you to go. Leave your father's house and go to a land that I will show you. Abraham didn't concern himself the location of this place or why this voice was talking to him. He did as God instructed. So he took Sarah, his wife, and his nephew, and all their possessions, and they gathered, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. They were moving to a different land. I don't know how many of you in here have moved houses in the same city before, but that's stressful. Have you ever moved to a house in one city to another? Equally stressful, probably more. They were leaving for good. There was no, yeah, I forgot something. Let's turn around. There was no calling up one of your neighbors and say, we forgot this. You need to mail it to us. No U-Haul trucks. You use livestock. You use wagons, or you carried it yourself. And it was a large group that was making this trek. I don't know how many of you have ever traveled with a large group of people before, but it's difficult to get everybody on the same page. There had to be some type of complaining. Why are we leaving Haran? Well, Lord told Abraham we got to leave Haran. All right, I'm on board. How long is it going to take? Don't know. We don't know where it is. Had to be some kind of complaining. Abraham passed through the land and placed the Shechem to the oak of Moriah. At the time the Canaanites were in the land, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he moved to the hill country in the east of Bethel, set up camp with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord Abram, and journeying on, still going toward the Negev. So right here is where they set up camp. This lovely oasis right here is where they went to. As if this journey wasn't difficult enough, they get to Negev and there's a famine. So you travel all this way, you get there, and then there's no food. You have to go into Egypt to find food. Now Abraham was scared to go into Egypt because he had an attractive wife. Can you imagine the conversation? Listen, we got to go find food, but you're attractive, so they're probably going to kill me when we get there. So let's just say you're my sister. So his wife, who they thought was his sister, as Abraham told Sarah, they did take her. They took her to Pharaoh's house. At this point, Abraham's wife is in another man's house. I don't know how that's set with you men. Wouldn't set well with me. And this is comical to me. I know this was the custom back then, but let's just say that Sarah was, in real life, Abraham's sister. I think your sister's cute. I want to take her to my house, and here's people and animals as a trade. So Pharaoh's house, it didn't last long. So here's Pharaoh's house, afflicted with great plagues. And Pharaoh said, why didn't you tell me she was your wife and your sister instead of your sister? So he kicks him out. Things are starting to look up. He gives him his wife back. He gets him to keep the animals. They go out of Egypt. They go back to camp. What else sticks out to you besides the fact that this was a very, very long trip? 800 miles. This is the desert. This is the desert. And it's either they traveled in the desert or mountains. So the warmest season was between these two dates. And the high temperatures were around 84. Lows were 73. If there was shade, there was few and far between. The cold season, these two dates, 68 being the high, low being 47. I don't know about that. It's got to be colder at night when the sun goes down. Probably a below freezing. You couple that with rain, sandstorms, dangerous animals, sickness, robbers. 800 miles. That's a long ride in a car with heat and air. I looked this up. The average human being walks 5 miles a day. I gave them 10 because they were probably above average people. And quite frankly, what else did they have to do? So 10 miles a day, so it took them 80 days. This whole trek took 80 days. Dr. Moore would have a heyday with these people. Can you imagine what they were wearing? Sandals. They didn't have Brooks or Pumas or New Balances, Nikes, Reeboks, what have you. This was an incredible but a difficult trip. Let's do a quick recap here. You have to leave your home, You lead family on a incredible journey through some very harsh conditions to an unknown location. Once you get there, you have to go further to find food. Food is found, but you fear for your life because you got to track your spouse. Spouse is taken away for a short time, and you get people and animals. Wife is returned. You get kicked out. Sounds like a great trip, doesn't it? Honestly, what do we have to complain about? I got to drive 20 minutes here to church. If I ever complained about how far it is to come here to church, someone please. I was going to say smack me, but we don't want to promote violence here, so say something to me. If we ever think God asks too much from us, read this account. You'll have a better appreciation about what these people had to go through. Abraham and his people went through a lot of stuff. And Abraham especially, we didn't even talk about Isaac. I don't have the emotional fortitude to sit up here and talk about how it would feel to sacrifice your son. Could do it. So Moses, the next person we're going to talk about. A little background about Moses. So a new king has been, a new king is in Egypt. He was scared of the people of Israel because there were so many of them. He thought that if enemies were to attack Egypt, that the children of Israel would side with the enemies and then they'd take over Egypt. So he had them build store cities there. The more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied. It reminds me of this old Doritos slogan they used to have. Crunch all you want, we'll make more. Oppress all you want, we'll make more. There was an order to kill all the Hebrew males. But the Hebrew midwives feared God, and they didn't throw them in there. So there was an order to all the people to throw all the males in the Nile River. But Moses' mother hid Moses in the reeds, and Pharaoh thought he found him. Moses got older, he saw a Hebrew and Egyptian fighting, so he killed the Egyptian man, so he flees to Midian for his life. And when Moses goes to Midian, he sees these seven daughters of the priest of Midian watering their flock, and these shepherds came and tried to run them off. He saves them, so he's rewarded with one of the daughters. People of Israel are still suffering this time, so you can see the last thing going through Moses' mind is ever go back to Egypt. Got a nice cushy job as a shepherd here. Life's good in Midian. We're familiar with the burning story, the account of the burning bush. This bush is just on fire but not being consumed. So God, Moses sees this and he goes to investigate it. But God stops him and says, "Remove your sandals, you're on holy ground. I am the God of your father, of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob." He's so terrified that he hid his face, and naturally so. See this bush burning, nothing happening to it. It had to be an awesome sight. God saw how bad his people were being treated, so he instructed Moses to go back to Egypt. The last thing Moses wanted to hear was, "You have to go back to Egypt." And he questions God, "Who am I? Who am I to go back to Egypt and do these things?" Certainly he was humbled by this request, but you had to sense some type of fear because of what he was known as in Egypt. He was a murderer. And God said, "I'll be with you." And that should have been enough for Moses, but it wasn't. Moses asked, "Who should I say sent me?" And the Lord said, "You say, I am sent you. The Lord, the God of your fathers, of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, has sent me to you." Moses is still skeptical. Not only is he going back to Egypt to free the people, but he's going back to the elders, the people of Israel, and going to speak to Pharaoh as well. Moses still says, "They're not going to believe me." So these two miracles, God displays the staff, turns into a snake and back, and then he afflicts Moses' arm with leprosy and back again. God said, "If they will not believe you or listen to either of these signs, try this. Turn the water from Nile to blood." Now, I don't know about you, but the snake to a staff to a snake and back again would have been enough for me. But it wasn't. Moses gives another excuse. "I'm not eloquent or persuasive speaker. Slow of speech and tongue." Does that sound familiar? "I can't lead a prayer. I can't sing a song. I can't teach a class." God said, "Who made man's mouth? Is it not I, the Lord? I will be your mouth." And one final plea, Moses. "Send someone else. Please, please send someone else." And you get this image. I've been on the receiving end and the delivery end of both of these, this situation. You're talking to your child, which in essence is what it is. You're trying to get them to do something, and they go excuse after excuse after excuse after excuse, and finally you just go, "Look, This is going to be all right. Moses, Aaron's going to be with you. We got this. I'm going to be here with you. God knew his fears and reassured him. The people who were trying to kill him were dead. So Moses finally returned to Egypt. I counted four excuses. I don't know how many y'all counted. But excuse after excuse after excuse, Moses gives to God. What kind of excuses do we have about not wanting to teach class, give a lesson, sing a song, lead a song? There's many other examples that we could talk about tonight. You could probably think of more other than the list that I have here. Life began for these men when they decided to step out of their comfort zone. We also have a choice. Any of these men could have said no. The parable of the prodigal son clearly points that out. We have a free will. The younger son asks to have his inheritance now. The father didn't argue, didn't say, let's talk about this. He gave it to him and he sent him on his way. Proverbs 16:9 says, the heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. We have free will. Any of these men could have said no. Noah could have said no. Noah could have said, you know, I'm good hanging out, planting my vineyards. But Noah feared God. Abraham left Haran not knowing where he was going. Moses was hesitant at first, but by faith he finally left Egypt. And this is interesting. Hebrews 11:24 didn't hit me until after I read it, until I studied for this. He could have been called Pharaoh's grandson. How sweet of a deal would that have been if you want to live that kind of life, a bad life? But he chose to suffer with God's people just like everybody, all of his other people were. So we can't say no, and sadly we sometimes do. How do we apply this to our service to God? Come up with six suggestions, and there's many, many more. Oops. First one is accept that you are less than perfect. Romans 3:23 tells us that all of us have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Would our service to God be any different than that? We all make mistakes. If you get up here, if you're worried about making a mistake, leading a song, giving a lesson, saying a prayer, presiding over the Lord's table, or what have you, I got some advice for you. Get in line, pal. It's going to happen. You're going to make mistakes. Accept it. Who would you rather make mistakes in front of? People that don't know you and don't care about you, or people who care about you and know exactly what you're going through when you're up here doing these things? Break the fear barrier. What are you really afraid of? 2 Timothy 2, verses 1 through 7. For God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power, of love, and of self-control. Psalms 27:1. This verse inspired one of the prettiest songs I've ever heard, and it's number 805 in our supplemental songbook. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is my stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Are your fears comparable to Moses? Obviously, he was a murderer. So, yeah, he had something to worry about. But God was going to be with him during the whole time. Do we fear? Do we have that kind of fear here in Somerset, Kentucky? Do we fear leading our family in a prayer out in public when we're out to eat because we think somebody's going to kill us? We don't have the same fear that Moses had. Ask for someone to help you. Moses had Aaron. Proverbs is chock full of all kinds of wise sayings that we've been talking about in the parenting class. Proverbs 12:26, one who is righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads him astray. Proverbs 27:9, oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Proverbs 27:17, iron sharpens iron as one man sharpens another. So if you want help, ask for it. There's plenty of people in this building who would love to study with you and help you grow. Detach and accept. Abraham was asked to leave his family. Moses was asked to leave Midian, where he had a shepherding job. The rich young man is a great parable about someone who is not willing to let go of something that's comfortable to them. The rich young man asked Christ what he must do to inherit eternal life, and Christ said, keep the commandments. And he said, well, I've done all that. Well, you lack one thing. Give up all the stuff that you have. Sell it to the poor and follow me. And he couldn't do it. It was a comfort to him. He didn't want to get rid of it. Hang out with some different people. Do not be conceived. 1 Corinthians 5, 15-33. Do not be conceived. Bad company ruins good morals. If you don't have people around you, friends around you who are not helping you get closer to God, it's time to find some new people. Imagine where you want to be. I hope y'all can see this. Imagine where you want to be. Philippians 3, verse 14. The Apostle Paul talks about, I press on towards the goal of the prize for the upward call of Christ, God in Christ Jesus. We set all kinds of physical goals for ourselves, for this earth. I want to be this when I grow up. I want to live in this neighborhood, work for this company, do this, 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 and that. Do we have spiritual goals set for ourselves? If someone comes up and asks you to lead a prayer or a song or anything of that nature, and you say, I'm just not ready yet, not there yet. Well, that's fine, but when will you be? You need to set some kind of spiritual goals for yourself. And the ultimate goal for us and our families is to be in heaven, which brings me to my last point. How many of you in here like family reunions? Do you go to family reunions? Is it uncomfortable going to a family reunion? Why is it uncomfortable going to a family reunion? Everybody there, most everybody there, has a commonality through the blood that runs through your veins that dates back a long, long time. I ask you this question. Are we family? Ephesians 4, 1 through 7 says that we are, especially verse 6. One God and one Father who is over all and through all and in all. We have a commonality through the blood of Christ, which he obtained with his own blood. So I ask you again, are we family? Yes, no, amen, something, nothing. It shouldn't be weird to be around one another. If it is weird, how do we fix it? How do we get to where it isn't weird? Sadly, sometimes a loss equals a gain. Some type of tragedy has to happen before we all realize how much we need each other and how much we need the prayers of each other. I'm not saying it's the right way, but it's a way. Constant exposure. What's the best way to get a suntan? Get in the sun. Parents, we as parents have an opportunity here. I know we had a responsibility to make sure our kids are around each other so when they get older, it's not weird to be around each other. And a sister in Christ here suggested this to me, and I appreciate that. Concentrated effort. We have to make an effort to make sure that we remember that we need each other. Everybody here does. And our bond as brothers and sisters can become stronger once we decide to step out of our comfort zone like Noah, Abraham, and Moses. I go back to the rich young man. There was something that was keeping him from following Christ. Something that was a comfort to him. We ask you tonight, is there something that's keeping you from following Christ? Is there something that you're just not comfortable giving up? Are you willing to give it up? If you are, we ask you to come forward now as together we stand and sing. Thank you.